This is Weekend Ag Matters, produced by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network and News Talk 1540 KXEL. Here are your hosts, Anna Hastert and Dustin Hoffman.
Thanks for tuning back into Weekend Ag Matters, brought to you by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Your host here, Anna Hastert, joined by Dustin Hoffman.
Well, hello there.
Hello, Dustin. How have you been?
I've been good, I would say. It's been an interesting week.
Yeah, let's talk about how interesting the week's been.
Well, it started out, well, it's been interesting the whole way around. I mean, you talk about, like, for instance, the WASDE report came out on Tuesday. Markets really, for once, didn't do a whole lot in response to it. And then you talked to a few market analysts. What kind of things were they saying?
Yeah, so I talked to a couple different market analysts, like you said. And the one really good conversation that I had was with Brian Grossman, who is with Zahner Ag Hedge. And mainly, he had three key takeaways from the report. One of them was corn ending stocks could have been worse. They came in a little above analyst expectations, so we don't like to see that, but could have been worse. They did shave a little bit off of soybean ending stocks, so that was a positive thing to see. Another thing was this may be the turning point for the grain markets. Brian thinks that there's a couple opportunities that might lie ahead. We're going to be taking weather and trade into consideration within the coming days. So his last key point was be prepared for an opportunity.
Yeah, and you talk about weather. I mean, we went from the last weekend in the 80s or close to the 80s here in Des Moines to the threat of snow by the middle of the week. That is just absolutely crazy. And of course, that puts more pressure on areas that have already suffered because of flood damage.
Right. And it could potentially just push back planting in a lot more areas than we were originally anticipating. Some farmers might not even be able to get into the fields this year, which is scary to think about in all reality.
And when you think about the areas of the state that aren't in the floodplains, you know, between the rivers, you know, we still have a lot of Iowa between the rivers. And that ground, you're talking especially up in the northern parts of the state, well, in the southern parts too, it was already saturated like crazy in the fall. And there was a lot of things that didn't get done in the fall, whether it was nitrogen, other fertilizers, maybe even tillage in some places. I saw some fields on the way to Clinton a couple weeks ago that weren't even worked last fall. And so that still has to be done before planting even starts. And you have to have dry ground for that. That window is going to be incredibly narrow here this spring.
Right. And we've published quite a few stories about those topics, about some of the challenges that will be presented to farmers ahead of the spring planting season. And of course, you can always find those stories on our website, which is iowaagnet.com. But Dustin, the potential for delayed planting isn't the only scary thing that's going on right now in the news, unfortunately. African swine fever virus, as you know, that's in China as well as other countries. Really no end in sight for this disease and its rampant spread. Let's talk about how that's impacting the markets here in the U.S.
Well, right now in the market side of it, you know, it's a wait and see because there's huge tariffs on pork products from China because of the trade war. However, China, the world's largest producer of pork by sheer volume, is losing herds at an astounding rate. And so therefore, they're looking to other markets to supplement that. They're buying pork from the United States, even with a 60% tariff on the pork products, because they need it because it's that much of a staple in their diet. But of course, also the African swine fever, the threat of it spreading. We've seen meat products that were questionable that were detained by USDA a month or so ago in the United States. We saw African swine fever tainted meat just last week in Japan get stopped at an airport there. I mean, I don't know who flies pork products around, but some people apparently do. And the thing is that scare of the spread and the rampant damage it can do once it's established has led to the National Pork Producers Council canceling the 2019 World Pork Expo that happens right here in Des Moines at the State Fairgrounds coming up in June.
Right, and that event hosts a lot of different swine there. They have some youth shows as well as some adult shows going on throughout the week. So yeah, that's huge. I mean, like you said, Dustin, African swine fever virus has not been confirmed in the U.S. pork herd yet. And hopefully we won't have to find out what it's like to have African swine fever here in the States. But we're making sure that, especially the National Pork Producers Council, is making sure that we're taking all the precautionary steps necessary to keep it out of our country.
Yeah, and we'll be talking a little bit later on in the program when we wind up with Jim Monroe of the National Pork Producers Council. Like he said, they looked at the statistics. The odds of it happening and coming to the United States were very low. But the Pork Producers Council thought any risk at all was not worth it. And so kind of like a pound of prevention for an ounce of cure is what we're hoping for in this situation. But we'll hear more from Jim Monroe coming up later on in the program.
Now, Dustin, you and I talked about weather and the impacts that's going to have on spring field work. And I actually talked to Doug Burns, who is Vice President of Related Services for Farm Credit Services of America, and talked about what farmers can actually do, what options they have in regards to planting this season, and what happens if they actually aren't able to get in the fields and plant the crops that they had intended to. So let's switch it over to my segment of Weekend Ag Matters. Thanks for joining me on this weekend segment of Weekend Ag Matters. I'm Anna Hostert with this weather-related report. Farmers in the Midwest are experiencing some challenges caused by Mother Nature. First, it was flooding, and now there's snow. This has created many challenges, especially ahead of the spring planting season. Some farmers, unfortunately, may not be able to get into the fields this spring to actually plant a crop like they had originally intended to do. But those producers should not fear, as they do have other options with crop insurance. I recently spoke to Doug Burns, who is Vice President of Related Services for Farm Credit Services of America, and he wants producers to know they definitely have options. Here's what Doug has to say about some of those options that producers have.
The first is there's always a final plant date, and they can continue to plant into that late planting period, which is typically 25 days, or they could switch to another crop that has later deadlines. And then the last option is they might be prevented from planting. So if they're prevented from planting, they could actually plant some cover crops, and there's some specific things they could do with that, or they could just idle the ground. So there are definitely some options when you get into the final plant date, prevent a planting, or continue to plant that crop.
Now, Doug encourages producers to get in contact with their crop insurance agent as soon as possible to go over these different options and to see which one might best fit their operation. There are some different requirements for those options that were listed by Burns, and I think it would be best for Doug to talk about those requirements, especially when it comes to prevented planting.
Attempt to plant the crop if you can put the crop in the ground, and crop insurance companies call it good farming practices if you're able to do that. To be eligible for preventive planting, not coverage, but an indemnity, would be if at least 20 acres or 20% of the unit is not planted. So you have to think about what type of policy do you have. Is it an enterprise unit or an optional unit policy? That's one requirement. And then the next is the crop must have been planted in one of the most four recent years.
According to Farm Credit Services of America, most producers are signed up under the option unit, which is the 20 acres or 20% of that option unit. And then for the enterprise unit, it has to be planted in two sections to actually get that discount. Taking a look at one of the other options, cover crops, there are many different types of cover crops. So Farm Credit Services of America is encouraging producers to contact their local NRCS office to learn about the proper species, seeding rates, and other features that come along with cover crops. There are also certain guidelines for haying, grazing, and harvesting. If you are to do some of those tasks before November 1st, there will be some impacts. So make sure you check out the types of cover crops that are eligible and what you can and can't do before November 1st. The best way to get this all figured out is to speak with a crop insurance agent or visit with Farm Credit Services of America. The best way to get in contact with them is by calling 1-800-884-FARM. Once again, that's 1-800-884-FARM. Or by visiting their website, which is fcsamerica.com. I'm Anna Hoster with this week in Ag Matters segment. Stay tuned for more news.
Farm Credit Services of America is pleased to report record cashback dividends of more than $230 million. For many of our customer owners, the share of earnings that benefits their operations and helps support their local communities is needed this year more than ever. We're proud to have shared more than $1.7 billion since 2004. Discover the power of ownership at fcsamerica.com. Agriculture works here.
April is National Food Month. With so many foods celebrating one day or the whole month, it's easy to see why. In April alone, we celebrate grilled cheese, the BLT, mushrooms, garlic, celery, tomatoes, soy foods, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, and even licorice. What do all these things have in common? You can find them all produced right here in Iowa. Yes, even the licorice. Iowa has a proud and storied history with feeding the world. Iowans have always been a leader in American agriculture. We are the number one producer of eggs and pork in the nation. Iowa-grown meat, milk, eggs, and vegetables can be found on tables all over this country. Whether you eat conventionally produced food, locally sourced, or organic, there are many great Iowa farmers producing that delicious food. The next time you're doing your food shopping, think about the hardworking Iowans who give it their all to put a meal on your plate. When you're doing your shopping, look for Iowa-grown foods or support local Iowa producers at farmers markets. We wish all of our Iowa farmers a happy National Food Month.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here is Ken Root.
Organic food was the only thing we ate when I was growing up in rural Oklahoma. I didn't know how trendy we were until just a few years ago, when the millennials began to request, even demand, that their food be grown without crop protection chemicals or inorganic fertilizer. I want to say that's good. But organic production gave way to traditionally grown crops because there was demand for more food from a growing population that wanted the food at a cheaper price. On that, farmers have delivered. Millennials are now the biggest consumers of organic food, with over half buying more expensive organic produce and packaged products versus about 20% of baby boomers, my generation. Large organic growers are elated by this announcement. Here is the response to a recent survey by Lauren Batcha, the CEO of the Organic Trade Association. She says the millennial consumer and head of household is changing the landscape of our food industry. Our survey shows that millennial parents seek out organic because they are more aware of the benefits of organic and that they place a greater value on knowing how their food was grown. They are deeply committed to supporting a food system that sustains and nurtures the environment. What makes millennials relevant is the size of their sector of our population. They are 75 million strong in an age group born from 1977 to 2004. The organic industry overall is benefiting from their buying habits. Growth in organic sales has climbed by double digits for the past several years. Meanwhile, back at the office farm and factory, we have the older generation that raised them. These kids were fed homogenized milk from cows that ate GMO grain, fruits and vegetables that were sprayed with pesticides to control insects and disease, and they drank water out of a well or from the municipal water supply. If you look at them as lab rats, they're fine. The food and water they ingested did not harm their health. But now they want to go backward in time, relative to food production technology, to get a product that is not more nutritious, not more healthy, but more expensive. The American dream has been to have a large supply of food at a cheap price. We have held ourselves up as the more developed nation compared to those in Africa, Asia, and even Europe because our food was cheaper. We have now a generation that's willing to pay substantially more for what they eat if it meets their criteria. What has really made organic food take off? The millennials are getting the credit because of their demand, but I contend it is because of profitability. This seems to be the strongest force behind the larger food companies who are part of the Organic Trade Association. For years, small organic farmers have been rewarded with above retail prices for their products grown in a local and fresh environment. But the trend now is to use the USDA regulations to brand a larger volume of food as organic. To do so, it will have to be grown in a cost-effective way and transported many miles. This seems to be counter to the spirit of organic in the eyes of the consumer who buys it for its unique qualities that industrialization takes away. Marketing of organic versus conventionally grown food has always been confrontational and negative. I don't like distortion of science and logic by misleading product claims. GMO-free is the newest buzzword. It's on everything. There are only 10 crops that have been genetically modified, but thousands of products say they are non-GMO. Organic has become a well-respected branding process that now has real-world certification. That may be its downfall, as the term may become generic and just show up on a large portion of the packages in the grocery store with a higher value attached. So the next generation to raise children, the millennials, may face an interesting dynamic of spending more for food and having less money to buy other things. However, there is a new generation of politicians saying, "Don't worry, the government will buy everything for you." Perhaps the government will require that only organic foods can be purchased with SNAP dollars. Who knows what distortions the government could cause in the marketplace? For their sake, let's pray the millennials become rich so they can continue their current preferences after their aging parents are gone. That's what I think. I'm Ken Root on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here again is Dustin Hoffman.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. I'm Dustin Hoffman. In the beginning of June, the world gathers in Des Moines at the Iowa State Fairgrounds for the World Pork Expo. It's a great chance for pork producers from all over the world to talk about the pork industry, and also a great time for the United States to show off as one of the top pork producers in the world and talk about the quality of the product they produce. It's a gathering that producers look forward to all year round. Unfortunately, this year, it won't be happening. Last year at the Pork Expo, the comment was made that it wasn't a matter of if a new animal disease outbreak would occur, but a matter of when. And after that, about 2 months later, in China, African swine fever reared its ugly head. And it's because of that devastating disease the National Pork Producers Council has decided to pull the plug on this year's show out of an abundance of caution. We hear now from Jim Monroe of the National Pork Producers Council. Jim, thanks for taking a few minutes to talk with us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so talking today, a big decision coming down this morning from the National Pork Producers Council that's going to have a big effect here in Iowa, and that is concerning the 2019 World Pork Expo. Jim, if you want to give our listeners a general overview quick of what's going on.
Yeah, well, I think many folks know that there is a growing risk of African swine fever worldwide. There was an outbreak in China, I think it was August of 2018 was the first report, and it's spread rampantly through China, which is the world's largest swine herd. So that fact makes the risk of it spreading globally significantly higher. It would be devastating to U.S. pork producers if we had an outbreak of African swine fever in the United States. It would immediately close our export markets at a time that we're already facing serious trade headwinds. So our board of directors made a tough decision, one made out of an abundance of caution. We think the risks of African swine fever entering the U.S. swine herd because of World Pork Expo are extremely low. But because we can't say that they're zero, the board made the decision to cancel this year's event, again, out of an abundance of caution.
And I'm sure when you have an event like the World Pork Congress, where you have that option to showcase what the pork industry means around the world, especially in the United States, that decision wasn't an easy one to make, I'm certain.
No, but the health of the U.S. swine herd, the livelihood of our pork producers, those are our top priorities. So that's what we're focused on. And again, just because while the chances of African swine fever spreading to the U.S. because of World Pork Expo are extremely low, we just decided to exercise abundant caution and cancel this year's event because, again, top priorities, swine health, and our producers.
You know, it was interesting last year at the Pork Congress, it was mentioned during one of your news conferences of the NPPC that, you know, it wasn't a matter of if we would be another livestock disease outbreak in the world, it was a matter of when. And only 2 months later, we had the African swine fever break out, and now, you know, it's led to this decision. It's kind of interesting how that's come full circle in less than a year.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we, as you know, we advocate on behalf of U.S. pork producers here in Washington, D.C. We happen to have more than 100 producers in town this week for our Legislative Action Conference. They're going to be up on the Hill visiting with their representatives in Congress, and one of the big topics will be animal disease, foreign animal disease prevention and preparedness. They'll be asking Congress to appropriate funds for 600 more agriculture inspectors for Customs and Border Patrol, just to increase the biosecurity measures and defenses against foreign animal disease entering the United States. And they'll be talking about Farm Bill implementation and the importance of USDA, executing the Farm Bill as intended and funding a vaccine bank for foot and mouth disease.
And, you know, you mentioned inspections with USDA, and that kind of got to be a hot-button topic earlier this week with an article coming out in the Washington Post.
Yeah, I think, thankfully, that article was very misinformed. Fortunately, the USDA came out and, I think, very clearly pointed out many of the flaws in that article. Our director of science and technology, Dan Kovich, who was interviewed for that story, unfortunately, none of his input was included. The Post ran a Dan's letter to the editor yesterday. And, you know, the underlying flaw in that article is it created the perception that somehow USDA was ceding its inspection authority, and nothing could be further from the truth. Nothing changes as far as the USDA having ultimate inspection authority and accountability for food safety, and we wouldn't want it any other way.
And, you know, going back to African swine fever there just for a minute, we, you know, had pork products that were seized, and obviously we've seen it enter in Japan through shipments of pork products there as well. You know, around the world, everybody's working to stem the tide of the spread of this disease, right?
Exactly. And I think USDA has done a nice job. You know, they I do think we need to see more ag inspectors at our borders and our seaports and airports. But, you know, we've got 60 new Beagle brigade teams deployed. That brings our total to 179. That was a much needed increase. And you've got overall inspections ramped up. And I think a lot of groups, including NPPC, doing, building awareness for important biosecurity protocols. And those are all good measures. And we're going to continue to be vocal about the importance of biosecurity protocols.
And with China suffering from African swine fever, they've been upping a little bit of their imports from the United States. And, you know, by preventing any as much prevention as we can, like you said, it would be a devastating loss if we were infected with African swine fever in this country. Because, like you said, it would shut down the exports right now when a time China's looking at our pork products, even with the tariff that they've got in place.
Yeah, to be sure. I mean, pork is a staple of the Chinese diet. They will certainly be looking for reliable sources of pork. I can't speculate on, you know, how they're going to source their pork in the future, but there is no more reliable source of pork than the United States. We produce the most affordable, the highest quality, the safest pork in the world.
All right, Jim, before we wrap up here, is there anything you want to add?
No, I think I just want to reinforce that, we're disappointed not to be holding World Pork Expo. It's a great event. Typically have, 20,000 stakeholders for the global pork industry gathering over 3 days, and we're disappointed not to have it this year. Again, this was a decision made out of an abundance of caution, and we think it's the right decision, we're going to continue to look after the interests of our producers.
All right, Jim, well, I thank you very much for taking the time to visit with us here today.
Thank you.
That was Jim Monroe of the National Pork Producers Council here on Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. That's actually going to put the wraps on our show as another weekend comes to a close. Hopefully you have a great weekend and are able to stay away from any wintry mixes that affected you throughout the week as we move our way, hopefully now towards a spring that will stick around for a while, and hopefully the fields will be able to be opened up soon, and hopefully the flooding, if there's any more of it coming down, will be alleviated sooner rather than later. Have yourself a great weekend. For Anna Hastert, I'm Dustin Hoffman here at the studios in Des Moines.
Weekend Ag Matters is produced by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network for News Talk 1540 KXEL. Get more agribusiness information online at iowaagnet.com. And listen for reports from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network 5 times each weekday on the Voice of Eastern Iowa, News Talk 1540 KXEL.